And good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair on the Voice of Vashon 101.9 on the frequency modulated band and streamed live all over the world to Captain Joe's people all over the world on voiceofvashon.org. My greetings today go out to all of Captain Joe's people who are traveling or who are going to travel, especially for the Easter weekend. I know of a number of my people who are voyaging or journeying or flying, and for them, a wish goes out for a not only safe travels, but an enjoyable one as we come into the early spring. I also am sending greetings out to those of Captain Joe's people who may be in need of a strengthening message. I've had a couple of reports over the week. In fact, one came to me as late as today of one of several of my people who are facing all different kinds of challenges, family challenges, work challenges. And it is my belief, my hope, my wish that the way that we approach life from the captain's chair is helpful to many of Captain Joe's people. I believe this to be the case because, as an example, the day after Mary died, I did my broadcast live. And I received so many comments and remarks as to how helpful that particular broadcast was. So for all of the people out there who are facing these challenges from Stockholm on one side of the world all the way around to Singapore on the other, this is your strengthening message. Take a few minutes to meditate on the depths of disaster in which you may find yourself, and then pick yourself up and climb back up into your particular captain's chair. I myself am going to be traveling. I'm going out to the eastern part of Washington and from there on to a town near Boise. It may be hard for you to believe, as it is very difficult for me to believe and accept, but I do have a couple of great-grandchildren. And I'm going to meet this one for the first time. So there will be four generations foregathered for the Easter weekend out in a little V town near Boise for the Easter weekend. So the binnacle list is not good today. As I walked in, I was thanking the counselor for having put up last week's broadcast. And as soon as it went up, and it did go up a little bit late, as soon as it went up, I had three calls or three messages from people who had things that they wanted to say about what I had talked about in that particular broadcast. So I was thanking him for doing that. And then he said, Truman's not here. He usually is here when I come in to do from the captain's chair. And counselor said, Truman has the COVID virus and he is pretty sick. So, Captain O'Brien, if you are listening, and I hope you are, this is your strengthening message. Just hang on, follow the instructions of your physician. For God's sake, don't pass it on to Mary O'Brien. We know what happens then. And for all of the rest of Captain Joe's people, including a retired Brother Coast Guard captain who is dealing with some really pretty serious stuff, know that all of you are in the palm of my hand. It is, as always, my wish, my desire, my hope, and my command that each of you on the binnacle list will follow the instructions of your medical provider so that you leave the binnacle list in the Captain Joe approved fashion. The book this week is called, it is by David McCullough, that wonderful author of so many popular historical treatises. This was called The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. And I picked it up out of my library. I realized that I had not read it. It was a gift from Mary R., who knew how much I like David McCullough, who regrettably died not too long ago. But he wrote, among other things, a history of the Panama Canal. He wrote a history of the Brooklyn Bridge. And I am in particular enjoy reading about bridges and canals and all sorts of major construction projects. But he also wrote a biography of John Adams. He wrote a wonderful biography of Harry Truman. And so I picked this one up knowing that I was going to enjoy it. By the way, the subtitle is Americans in Paris. And it talks about the period between essentially in the Americans in Paris who went in the 19th century. And I thought that it would be just an enjoyable book to read. But I got into it and I realized that there was a section in there which has some pertinacity to what is happening in our own country today. In 1870, the French, under the leadership of the Emperor Napoleon III, and I refer you to any good history of France, especially the history of France in the 19th century, to learn why France declared war on Prussia in 1870, because that's really beyond the scope of what we're talking about here. But in fact, they did. The French declared war on Prussia on the 15th of July in 1870, and it was a disaster for the French. And it ended by a terrible siege of Paris by the Prussians. They set up a blockade around the city of Paris, which went on and on and on, and essentially starved the Parisians into a final surrender. It was an awful blow to French pride. It was an awful blow to the French economy. And worst of all, many young men died on both sides. The emperor fled to the United Kingdom, and he remained in exile for the rest of his life. It is the sequel to that that is of particular interest, because during the period of the blockade and during the period of the siege, our minister to France was a man by the name of Elihu Washburn. Elihu Washburn fulfilled all of the requirements, all of the definition of the term shipmate, except, of course, this was all having to do with things that were happening in Paris in 1870 and into 1871. So one of the things that he did was that he provided all sorts of assistance to all sorts of people. Very few of them were American citizens. He was able to get most of the American citizens out, pass them through the German lines because, of course, the United States was not a belligerent in this particular war. After the surrender, the emperor fled, and the he had also been captured by the Germans, and then when he was released, when the empire was dissolved and the communard began. And I'm not going to get into much of the detail of all of that because I want you to read the book. It is again called The Greater Journey, Americans in Paris. But I'm bringing up Elihu Washburn because he was a great example of the altruism of America and Americans at its best. And he helped a number of Germans who had been caught in Paris when the Germans began the siege of Paris. The descriptions of all of this are absolutely chilling. And the subsequent events in which Parisians tried to kill other Parisians during the period called the Communard are even worse. We find ourselves now in a period in our beloved country where Americans, as you look at the events of the 6th of January, I'm not going to get into the political aspects of it. I'm just going to point out that the humiliation to me as an American of having our citizens attacking other citizens in the name of some political righteousness on both sides is just appalling to me. So I was heartened when I read this story about Elihu Washburn. For a very short period, he had been the Secretary of State, and that short period lasted for only a few days. So I have a friend who has an office in Maine State. She is an employee of a Maine contractor for the State Department, and she has an office in Maine State, and I'm going to ask her here on this program to the next time that she is in Maine State to go down into the lobby, look at all the portraits of the secretaries of state and see whether there is one there of Elihu Washburn, who held the post for the shortest period on record, which was about 3 days. And then he realized that he was not fitted for that, and so Grant asked him to become the minister to France. It is a wonderful story. It is a wonderful exposition of American and American energy and an American knowing what is the right thing to do and then going ahead and doing it, of Elihu Washburn. And I highly recommend this particular book, not only for the story of Americans of all sorts who were living and working in Paris during the 19th century, but in particular, Elihu Washburn. The magazine today is The Professional Mariner. All of you know that this is one of my favorite magazines. And it has just come to me, and the article that I am talking about here is that there have been a number of deaths on cruise ships in Antarctica. Most cruise ships go from the southern tip of South America, from Santiago or Ushuaia, across the Drake Passage, which is one of the nastiest pieces of water in the entire world. And all of these ships that are listed in this particular article are not of the U.S. flag, but the U.S. is involved in the investigations of the accidents. And the reason for that is that whenever there is a shipping company that provides cruises that includes American citizens, then under the International Maritime Organization code that has to do with investigations of nautical disasters and tragedies, that the nation that has citizens that are involved in these accidents is allowed to be a party to the investigation. And so in all of these cases, the U.S. Coast Guard is part of the investigating team. I bring this particular story up because during the virus, there was not a great deal of cruising going to Antarctica. Many companies went into abeyance. But also to tell everybody that one of the things that is part of the Antarctic Treaty is the regulation of the number of people that are allowed onto the Antarctic continent at any given time. It includes also such things as you are not allowed to get any closer to a penguin than 5 meters, although nobody has told the penguins that, and sometimes penguins, particularly the emperors, will try to come closer to the humans. But once the penguins all get the word on this five-meter rule, I'm sure they will all comply. The effort got started at, it should be no surprise, Scott Polar Research Institute, where Dr. John Heap, a companion of the Order of Saints Michael and George, CMG after his name, was one of the architects of the Antarctic Treaty. And I was privileged to work with him and with a couple of other people, in particular Dr. Bernard Stonehouse, in working up some of the rules which are now in place for cruising in the Antarctic area, so below 60 South, so that we continue to protect the continent. It is always a tragedy when people, in particular in cruise ships, who have spent a lot of money to have an enjoyable time and become either damaged or in some cases are become deceased. So article goes on to talk about the process and the procedure for these investigations and to list some of the ships which are now cruising in the Antarctic. There's been a great deal of improvement in the quality of the ships that go down, and in particular those ships which should carry an ice class so that they can get in close to the continent. Ships which carry 500 passengers or more are not allowed to land anybody in Antarctica. And so when you, if you're thinking about making a cruise to the Antarctic, I urge you to go to the International Association of Antarctic Tour Operators and go to their website and do a little bit of research before you make your selection. The other article that I'm talking about today is one from my old friend. I don't know him, but I read his article every month when the professional mariner comes to my box. It's called The Mariner's Notebook, and it is by Captain Kelly Sweeney. And Captain Kelly always has some good things to say. They're good things in the sense that he is a working captain and he is a very pragmatic sailor. And this time he is talking about and laying into, and I believe quite properly, the Coast Guard and the way that they have licensed, how they are now licensing mariners, including captains, including such people as captains of the ferry boats in the Washington State ferry system. And Captain Sweeney, is talking about how the Coast Guard went from an in-house system for managing license examinations and now it's being done by contractor. And the contractor is made up of people who are neither sailors nor, and therefore are not licensed mariners themselves, have never endured the process. And it really does sound terrible. And if there was ever anything that Admiral Fagan, the Coast Guard's commandant, and who is our senior marine inspector, should be looking at, it should be that. So, Admiral Fagan, I'm passing that one on to you. That is a pontification for you from the captain's chair. My friend and glacier sailor, Fred Nichols, sent me the contact details for Admiral Stoss. You all will remember that last week I talked about Admiral Stoss's book, Breaking the Glass Ceiling and Breaking Ice, or something like that. I don't have it in front of me. And he sent me her contact details. I put in a call to her this morning. I was, of course, shifted over to a voicemail business, and I am going to organize such that I get her on with me by telephone. Finland has joined the NATO, and today North Atlantic Treaty Organization, and today should be the day. And I bring that up because the Prime Minister's party, at the same time that Finland joins NATO, has lost the election, which means that the Prime Minister herself is no longer the prime minister. This is unfortunate because she raised the level of appearance of prime ministers all over the world by an order of magnitude of many, many notches up the scale. And I hope that she is not gone politically. Finland is a country which operates with many, many political parties and therefore almost always has a coalition government. And so hopefully she will not have been lost. She does, so far as I'm concerned, and I don't follow Finnish politics that much, but so far as I can see, she did a good job as prime minister. And hopefully she will come back. But I welcome Finland into the North Atlantic Treaty Organization and hope that soon Sweden will also be admitted. And what's happening with Sweden is that each country who is a member, there are now 31, I believe, with Finland. Maybe that's 32. But in any case, each country must agree that applicants, new applicants, are allowed to join. And Turkey is holding up the accession of Sweden to come into the organization. Let us hope that they will finish with whatever their objections are. Sweden will be admitted to the organization, and that will help us in particular in the Arctic. The article came to me today about the commissioning of the Coast Guard cutter Warren Diempert. What a name. Hull number WPC 1151. And I bring this one up because Warren was a true hero in the Coast Guard pantheon of heroes. He was a crew member in the Coast Guard cutter Escanaba when the Dorchester sank. Dorchester is famous because she is the ship in which the four chaplains lost their lives because they gave up their life jackets when Dorchester had been torpedoed. Escanaba was picking up survivors, and Warren, I'm not going to keep going over his surname because I'm sure I'll get it wrong. So Warren was one of their rescue swimmers, and he was in the water helping to save over 100 survivors of Dorchester. It was only a few months after that that Escanaba herself was sunk by a German U-boat, and all hands except two were lost. Escanaba is of interest to Coast Guard people because she'd been homeported in the Great Lakes, and she came out of the Great Lakes to go to war as part of the Battle of the Atlantic. And Warren lost his life in that sinking and was posthumously awarded the Navy and Marine Corps Medal for his heroism during the rescues of the Dorchester survivor. It always warms my black captain's heart when I get to read stories about this, and in particular when a Coast Guard cutter is named for people who have kept their oath and who were, in fact, true shipmates. There's a lovely photograph that goes with the commissioning, and it shows one of the surviving relatives of Warren presenting a long glass to a first-class bosun's mate in the crew of the new cutter. And the long glass is the badge of office of the officer of the deck, and it is customary for the family of the person for whom a ship is named to present gifts. And this particular one, the long glass, a telescope tucked under the left arm of the officer of the deck, is part of the commissioning photographs that went with this particular one. I really liked reading that article and talking about it. From G Captain, another one of my favorite sources. The Chief of Naval Operations appeared before a committee to justify his budget, and he was asked by the ranking member why there were no icebreakers in the Navy budget request. I find the amount of wrong information in this particular article to be appalling. First of all, that the member of the committee, which is passing on the Navy budget, did not know that the Coast Guard is the one for whom the icebreaker fleet is a part. that it is completely on the shoulders of the Coast Guard, of the succession of commandants from Jim Gracie, who I served as the ICE boss, all the way up to Admiral Fagan, the present commandant. It is completely on their shoulders that we are in the sad and sorry predicament that we are today so far as icebreakers are concerned. It is my understanding that the newest one, which is to be built by now a company called VT Halter, is not even, I'm not sure I've got that one right. In any case, the company which is building the first ones is that no steel has yet been cut for that particular ship. It will take 5 years to build her and add on a year for each one of the ones to come after that. And in the meantime, the Russians are skylarking around all over the Arctic as they wish and feel that they want to with their incredibly large and powerful icebreaker fleet. It is a source of disappointment and shame to me that we are in this position, but the Navy had nothing to do with that in terms of policy decision, and in fact has been helpful, as I understand it, with the actual administrative side of letting the contracts. I want to see some action, and my sea bag is packed to go back to Washington and sit at the highest levels and give some thoughts as to how we can move this whole process forward. And the answer to me is not to buy or lease or rent some so-called icebreaker that is out in the commercial fleet. And I've talked about that before. The answer is to build our own, to build them strong, to build them simple, to build them repeatable, to build them obedient, because an icebreaker doesn't have to be very complicated. The Vashon Park District is asking for its levy to be renewed. I'm hopeful that I can get the executive director of the Park District on with me soon to talk about that. The Park District, of course, includes the Point Robinson Light Station. The Coast Guard owns the station, but takes care of only the part that makes it a working light. It's characteristic, quick flash 2 every 12 seconds, white and visible for 15 nautical miles. And it remains watching properly every night. So we are carrying out our part of it, and part of that is to make sure that the levy passes. I'm not going to tell you, if you are a resident of the magical isle of Vashon, how you should vote. I'm just telling you that I will vote aye, and I hope to get Elaine on when we are a little bit closer to the election. Strangely enough, it's the end of April is the election. Usually elections are on the first Tuesday of every month. The question of illegal immigrants all over the Caribbean continues to be extremely troublesome for the Coast Guard, and we continue to pick up all over the Caribbean people from Cuba, from the Dominican Republic, from Haiti in particular, and occasionally from Honduras, all of them in unseaworthy vessels, many of them so unseaworthy that we're then picking up survivors out of the water. So I am just bringing this up because we continue to perform the life-saving and rescue duties that we have done since 1790. And it is always a matter of particular pride to me that I'm able to report on those things. And once again, it is 1,300 hours, two bells of the afternoon watch. This is your Captain Joe, as always, up in the captain's chair. We never say goodbye. We say until we meet again next week, I will give you my report of the meeting with my great-granddaughter for the first time. And as always, I am up in the captain's chair. I am on station and watching properly.